come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast.
Cue thunder.
Every Saturday night, whether you like it or not, the Saturday Night Freak Show is coming your way on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and this week, Google Play. That's right.
Oh, my God.
So welcome all I'm you sure Google free. Play listeners. It's still free. Yeah. So give us a like, hit subscribe. Or, you know, anything.
Funny face emoji.
Send us money. You know, I mean, it's all good.
Send us money.
So what we
He's
did
not going
here...
to tell us about it.
25
no,
cents.
No, nothing yet. Nothing yet. Still waiting.
So what we do here is we watch movies every Saturday. Then we gather around a bar. We drink a lot of beer. At least I do. And then we talk about it for your edification and listening pleasure. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars, including
Toby,
Holly,
Travis,
and I'm Colin. And this week we watched a movie chosen by
Travis,
and it was called
House,
and it's from the year
1986 or 5?
86, and it was directed by
Steve Miner, the guy that directed Friday the 13th Part 2.
Steve Miner directed Warlock, motherfucker. One of the classic movies has been on this show. You should go check out our past episode. Yeah.
It was produced by Sean S. Cunningham of Friday the 13th Part 1 fame, the guy that created the franchise that rocked off the 80s.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were saying. This is, wait, how many Sean Cunningham movies can you name?
Friday 13th and House.
Deep Star 6. Same.
Really?
Same group of people. Harry Manfredini did music. I don't know who wrote it. But yeah, Deep Star 6. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
No,
that's the, like, Dan O'Bannon.
Nope.
No, that's deep.
In the year 1989, suddenly Hollywood developed this obsession with, we want to do underwater
monster exactly movies. What you're talking about.
There was Leviathan, Deep Star 6, and The Abyss.
Was it,
the all
Abyss.
Came
was
out
there a movie called The Deep?
Yeah. Oh, I love The Abyss.
Yeah, me too.
The Deep was a Peter Benchley who wrote Jaws.
Is that the octopus squid? Is that no? That's the beast. Whatever.
That's the beast.
Doesn't matter. There's a lot of them down there. Be scared of the beach.
Yeah. There's also a movie Sean Cunningham did called Spring Break. Yeah, anyone back in the day when it was all like, beach movies.
Sean Cunningham.
In the 80s and nudity.
They actually used to do like family movies before. They're like, hey, this thing called Halloween happened. Let's just kind of rip on that and make some money or whatever. Then boom, success.
But it's funny that
these people, once they have success in horror, it's hard for them to get out, because they're like, you get called the master of horror after once or two, one or two. Yeah. Especially Friday the 13th. It is one of the best horror movies ever goddamn made. So, even though you're like, it's Halloween with the end of Carrie tacked on. it's like, that's how you make a movie. You watch two other movies that are great and you
splice them
you
together.
You make that movie.
Yeah.
That's what this is what House is. Like, I hope
like that's what we just watched.
Yeah, I hope you didn't watch the Japanese movie from the 60s called House. That's also a really good horror movie.
Yeah, also okay. This movie apparently not at all based off of the TV show House.
No, it's nothing to...
I mean, I had never seen it before, but, I didn't really expect it to.
No.
It was like Hugh Laurie was just going to pop out of a closet at some point.
I mean, I was waiting, but...
We're like an hour and a half in. I'm like, where is Hugh Laurie? It's not showing up.
So right, but you know who does show up in this? The fucking greatest American hero. You don't know who I'm talking about, dude.
Yeah, Carrie's boyfriend.
William Catt. No greatest American hero?
Yeah.
He finds a suit that's delivered by aliens. He puts it on.
What's the theme song? Him? Can you sing it?
That's the Believe It or Not, I'm Walking on Air.
Yeah.
Believe It or Not, George is at home.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that.
It's a good looking
guy,
though.
Where could he be?
Yeah. That's the theme song.
I think that was actually my voicemail, outgoing message.
I think that was everyone's.
And nobody knows what the show is that it comes from. Amazing.
But I've always liked the guy's the boyfriend from Carrie. He was, because you always wonder, is this a trick on Carrie? Does he really like her? Is he really trying to give her a chance? And because his girlfriend's just like, ask Carrie White out. Okay.
He seemed like a decent fellow. He didn't deserve what happened.
And this could have been Luke Skywalker. Because they casted Carrie and Star Wars at the same time. So William Catt could have been Luke Skywalker.
True story.
Imagine that dimension.
Hmm. Yeah, right? He was in the running. They were sharing the same casting office, casting both those movies up at the same
time. He would have been too confident. You needed like Mark Hamill's like, whoa.
Yeah. So it's like an alternate universe. Star Wars, he's probably Luke Skywalker.
So House is kind of like if you took Poltergeist, Evil Dead, and Nightmare on Elm Street and rolled it into one movie. It really tries to capture the feeling of all three of these movies.
Well, it's a monster movie, which I guess, you know, you go into it, a movie's called House. You figure when you're going to be ballsy enough to call your movie House, this has got to be the ultimate haunted house movie. And that's not really what
it's
you
not
get.
What it is.
No. Like, at all.
I know the difference.
Because in the ultimate, well, I mean, like, scary ghosts and all this stuff, and you're thinking, like, you know, The Haunting, The Amityville Horror, The Changeling.
Yeah.
The Shining. This doesn't feel like any of it.
Well, because Ghostbusters and Poltergeist have come out. Yeah. So that means you're going to have fun at the movies, right? Mm-hmm. And Nightmare on Elm Street, you know.
Well, that gave us the idea to open the doors and play with, like, dimensions and, you know.
And that's why I've always – this is why this movie stands out to me as a than other ghost movies. Because most ghost movies are the – you hear, this is the creepy tale of the ghost. And then for the first 45 minutes, people are like, hello? Hello? You know, where's Susan? But this actually gives you kind of the character's perspective on like what a kind of a dimension altering ghost can do. Almost like a Oculus that came out recently, how it gave you a cool different perception of like a ghost could be like, do you want your apple? It's a like a light bulb, or, you know, ghost, you know, zinger.
Well, like the movie 1408 maybe did something along these lines where the ghost actually plays with your, or the,
it's
is
your
it even
mind.
A ghost. It's a haunting of some type. We're not even sure in this movie if it's a spirit or what, a force, let's call it.
A force,
that can alter your perception so you hallucinate, but you're not sure if your hallucination is you're going crazy or there's actually some type of supernatural occurrence happening within the domicile.
Yeah, and I like how this movie starts off with like a boy delivering groceries to you assume an old lady, right? Because it's a nice, beautiful house. And, you know, he's just like, Mrs. You know, no able-bodied person has somebody delivering groceries.
I totally
speak
would.
For yourself,
I totally
sir.
Would. You just I sit hate around. Going to the grocery store.
Yeah. I'd like this, and this. There are services that do it. You can do it. You can order it online.
I don't think it's like, I'll put it on your tab. We don't do that shit anymore. It's like, we take credit over the phone. Call. But, so the guy finds the old lady hanging. You know, so right there, you're like, holy shit, you know, this house is so horrible. There's something in this house that's so horrible.
It makes old ladies kill themselves.
Makes old ladies kill themselves. Were not you? Like even by pill. They have a thing full of pills. They could do it easily. She's like, no, I need this right now. I can't even wait the few minutes it takes for a pill to go through my system.
Right. Well, I got a question then, because Travis and I have seen this movie before. We have two newbies to the movie tonight. So at this point in the movie, were you thinking the setup for this movie is going to be that this old lady is the ghost that's haunting the house?
At first... That was my initial impression.
Okay.
I kind of thought that at first, but then I figured that was probably a red herring.
All right. Just curious. I'm curious. Like, because, you know, you've seen the movie so many times. You're watching it going like, this happens and this happens. I'm like, if you were first time going through this in 1986 or, you know, whenever you're first seeing the movie, like, is that the impression that the audience, that the filmmakers are trying to give you?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. I always recall just right from the get-go remembering, like, oh, you know, there's something horrible. Because, I mean, then it gets passed down to William Catt, who is a horror author.
Yeah.
Roger Cobb.
And they talk about how, like, you hear how, Roger Cobb for horror.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to work on his, like, my Vietnam, like, book that will depress
everybody.
I love
that none of his fans, there's an early scene where he has to go to, like, a book signing or something, and all of these like drooling fans are coming up to him, and one of the guys asks him, you know, like, what are you working on next? He's like, my Vietnam book. And they're like, oh, that's really great.
Sounds,
yeah, wanders off.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is the year of Platoon, damn it, 1986. This is when the Vietnam thing was still happening in movies. Full Metal Jacket was the following year, right?
I don't know,
shit, there were still casualties of war in the future. That was 89. So yeah,
Rambo 3. Yeah. It's still coming.
That was Afghanistan. That movie foretold
Rambo
the future.
Two. I'm sorry, Rambo 2.
Yeah. It was the year before. Well, I think that also plays into, as we're going to get into it, I think Rambo was also a heavy influence on this movie. But
maybe. Yeah.
All right. So Roger Cobb is an author. He's distraught because he has lost both his marriage and his kid prior to the beginning of this movie, right? So his son has disappeared. In a scene, we see him at the house.
He remembers a lot of things in this movie.
Well, at first, all we know is that he's missing because he makes a call to his friend at the FBI.
Yeah.
And so we know that there's a case that this kid's missing. At first, that's all we know.
Yeah. Does the FBI get involved in, like, child abduction?
That's what I was thinking.
I thought it was across state lines.
Yeah, but
he's
thinking,
stop calling so-and-so at the CIA.
Well, because I'm thinking he's an author that has contacts with these, so he's kind of calling in favors with friends. And that's what, like, hey, dude, leave the guy alone. It wasn't like a threat to, like, leave the CIA guy alone. You know, it's just like, hey, buddy, you know, like, he called me and said you were bugging him, you know.
The CIA has things to do.
Yeah, so he's just calling in favors that he's done research from his books. That's what I gather from that scene.
Yeah, well, you could be right. That would fit.
Yeah.
So he moved.
It seemed like the FBI guy was trying to blow him off, though, because the secretary was like, oh, well, he's on the other line. He's like, I'll wait. And then the guy came right on the line.
Yeah. Because I do feel like it's one of those, like, I mean, the movie doesn't explain it right away, but I mean, the mysterious circumstances of which the kid disappears, where the kid's just in a pool, the guy says he dives in, well, we see him dive in, and the kid's just gone from the pool, right? And everybody's like, where's the kid, dude? He's like, huh, he's in the pool.
I guess the way that that I originally read that was, well, I don't know, did I read it this way? You know it's a haunted house movie, so I guess I didn't see it, you know, the way that the movie's trying to set it up, but the kid's playing in the backyard, and then he's gone, and Roger runs out front, and there's a car that peels off, and there's squealing tires, and then he's like, you know, Jimmy, where you at? So the impression I think you're originally supposed to get is maybe the kid was abducted right there, right? And then when he runs into the backyard, he sees the kid in the pool, jumps in, and the kid's not there. And so this, I think, is supposed to establish, like, is Roger cracking under stress right away? Like, this is the beginning of the stress fracture.
But he shouldn't even be stressed at that point, though, right? So why would he crack under stress there? He had his wife. He had his kid. He's just like...
Well, because his kid's like...
Someone
took
his kid.
Yeah, his kid's gone and he's flipping out.
Well, and because he's a Vietnam veteran, so the stress...
PTSD. PTSD.
I don't buy it.
I'm not sure. No, but I like that idea, except...
Aren't you a vet?
Yeah, I can say that. They just don't want us to have guns, man. I'm just... we're not talking... Yeah, I could... No, goddamn, I can make deep commentary on this episode. But I go to Vietnam. I went to our generation's Vietnam.
Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. Vietnam, that's what I call it.
All right.
You don't call that? That's what all the military guys call it. It's our own personal
language. I like that idea. I like the idea that maybe it is. I mean, the movie hasn't shown us that he's... wait. At this point, when he's having the flashback, it has been revealed that he's writing the Vietnam memoir.
Yeah, yes. Already. Yeah.
So they have set that up.
And he keeps like sweating every time he remembers it. He's always like...
Right, he so has to get this out of his system. I was thinking, like, throughout the whole movie that, okay, so he starts thinking about his time in Vietnam, and he starts writing about it, and this is whole, just like a traumatic episode that's happening inside of his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that it's like, kind of like Babadook, you know, where it's like you don't know whether it's happening inside the person's head or whether it's really happening to them.
Well, this is one of these things that, like, I mean, I guess this kind of goes back to the screenplay, right? I don't know if we mentioned this, but Fred Decker, who wrote and directed
Monster Squad
and Night of the Creeps, two fucking underrated classics from the 80s that you should check out, definitely. But he wrote the script of this. And so, you know, the story, I guess that...
Well, he wrote the story. Some guy named Ethan something wrote the script.
Oh, did he? I thought it was the other way around.
No, it was story by Fred Decker, then
Ethan Wiley.
Whoever.
Who wrote House 2, the second story.
That's Caterpuppy.
Greatest tagline.
Great title. Yeah. But I guess, you know... When you're trying, I try to divorce myself in some ways from the, like, what you saw, the way the director did the movie, and like how it was written.
Right?
So, like, could it be written in a way that, because when you watch this movie, there's no way really that he's having these, you know, that there is any chance that he's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's the fucking house is full of monsters, and that's what's actually happening.
Right. Yeah. Well,
because it's a fun, kind of funny horror movie.
Yeah.
But, like, if you just look at the script, it's like, and you shot it in a different way with less big. you know, sculpted animatronic creatures in it. Could you play this sure. off? Like, with the same
make
script.
Make it a psychological yeah. thriller.
But the monsters,
yeah.
But the monsters.
I think so. The whole time I was thinking that. Yeah. That you could totally make twist just a few things, take out the monsters, and you can make it a psychological yeah, horror.
The
but
whole thing was just a psychological
absolutely.
Episode.
But
yeah.
the monsters were part of the psychological. He's a horror well, yeah. writer. So the monsters were a part of the horror, and then his Vietnam flashbacks, you know, added the other part. That's why it's like, the monsters are important, and yeah. they add the fun to the movie.
Well, I get that. I'm just like, if you were to do it with like less stylistic yeah. monster, mm-hmm. with, without that specific style mm-hmm. of monster. Like, they kind of went yeah. for like the cartoony, you're right? Like
yeah,
the
yeah,
cartoony
yeah.
kind well, of
it's
monster.
It's the Evil Dead. It was the 80s, right? It's right. the Ghostbusters, the Evil Dead. It's like, you want them to be scary, but I mean, they come out at surprising moments. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like how it's like right from the get-go, he sees his aunt and she lays out the ground rules of like, it'll trick you. I didn't think it was going to get me. But it get, I mean, and that's really the only exposition you have for, like, this is all personally attached to him. Mm-hmm. All the monsters, all the whatever, the fact that, like, this tricked me. It, the house tricks you to killing yourself. It's like, that's a fucking ghost story, dude. Like, that's awesome. Not a lot of, like, I've never really heard that in ghost movies. That it, that
1408?
Yeah.
But it tricks you to kill yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The room, once you go
was
in.
Was this written before 1408?
I don't know when then
Stephen King.
Yeah, I don't know when he wrote it. I'm guessing he wrote that after 86, but I could be wrong.
You know, still most of these movies aren't necessarily, you know, they all have the backstory of the, this is your character who is possessing the house. That's usually what stories of these ghost movies. That's why I like how this movie really goes away from that. It doesn't like bog it down in reality of like, if we find this kid buried in the cellar, all we have to do is bring him to the church. And, you know, it's just like, that's the easy out. You know, this movie really plays with you. I mean, right from the get-go when, I mean, shit, we were all talking and laughing when, for some reason, William Katz is scared of the closet. You know, it's one of those things the movie does that's weird. It's like, it tries to be like suspenseful. It's like, why is he already scared of opening this closet? Like,
when he starts packing that scene in his apartment?
No, no, because, no, no, this is after he gets to the house.
It's because of the photograph, the painting that he sees, the painting that his aunt has done where the closet is the centerpiece of it, right?
Yeah.
So isn't he like wary of it?
Because the realty dude that like, brought him through the house just to kind of give us, the audience, a little explanation. Because why would you? If it was left to you, why would you need that realtor guy there right, except for to tell the audience, like, yep, this house is crazy. Yep. I was like, is he
buying
this?
That's why I was
this?
So confused. I was like, did he buy the house? Did he inherit it? Why is this realtor there?
Yeah, there
so
had confused. There wasn't the inheritance speech.
Yeah.
There really wasn't. You just, he was at the funeral, so you're like, okay, this was his, and he had a story about how his aunt raised him. You know.
Well, you bet he had to tell that to the exposition guy, the realtor.
Yeah.
Like that happened in that. Well, I was like, I guess this time around, maybe I was more confused about like the relationship that was actually taking place between the aunt.
Maybe they added the kid's story. What if that's edited in? Because it's only in a few parts. So what if he was like getting inherited the house in the original script? I'm just saying. That could not be it at all. But I'm just thinking like, why would that scene be there? If they were just gonna, you know,
which scene are you talking about now?
The realtor. If he wasn't going to get the house inherited, if there wasn't
well,
that scene,
I guess that scene made sense to me because the subsequent scene, he meets the neighbor, which is played by George Wendt from Cheers TV show,
nosy neighbor in the '80s,
and the neighbor is like, you know, oh great, there's somebody else moving in here, and there's a funny joke because he's like, that lady who was in here before, she was crazy. This old bitch was blah blah blah.
He just went on and
he's
on.
Like, that was my aunt. But a heart of gold, though. She was
looked younger than her age.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, that was great.
That's a
that was a pretty good
joke.
Moment.
I love that joke.
But I guess,
really good joke.
Here's my thing. So the realtor thing scene and the scene with George Wendt seem like they're part of the same movie. Because in this universe, I used to, like, my aunt raised me, and that was many years ago, and I haven't been back here in a while. Now I've taken possession of this house, and I move in, and this is the neighbor who's lived here for God knows how many years, and I'm a new neighbor moving in, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But our flashbacks, which pepper the story, basically say that that at some point, Roger Cobb and his wife, the beautiful Kay Lenz, who should have been in more shit, right? She should have been.
She was beautiful.
The very tan.
Yeah, the very tan Kay Lenz. So they lived in the house with the aunt, or
they at least
stayed
visiting? There or okay. visited, or they are known to visit.
But George Wendt didn't know them.
Yeah. But the lady across the street did. Because she knew, are you here with your wife this time? She knew that.
Oh, she was just checking to see if he was married.
Oh, maybe you're right.
The thing with the kid disappearing happened. Did it happen before? Okay, so before the aunt died, and then the aunt died.
Yeah, what did the neighbor know? He's so nosy. He'd be like, hey, isn't your kid like the one that disappeared in the pool?
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, what if they added that? Because they're like, we need more of a heart connection in this movie. What if they added the kid?
Well, it's almost like it feels like they retconned it. The only thing that really does is it's like, I mean, I guess it says that the kid is in the house because he disappeared in the house.
It's a goal for the story. Yeah. Like, oh my God, they, you know, cause, well, there's like a rag covering that and he sees like, oh my God, my son's in the bathroom mirror. You know?
Yeah. Because the old lady has painted the picture as like the clue to where you can find your kid.
Like 12 o'clock in the closet. Like she even did like all the paintings. There's all these paintings in the house and they all have like, there's the garden tools that fly around, you know? Utensils, so she painted clues, and that's what's kind of funny. Like, I wish we had a little bit more backstory on the aunt, because she's this crazy person painting clues to what the house is doing. That's cool. That's a cool idea,
or is going to be doing in the future.
The scene where the aunt comes in, and is it after the kid disappears, and she's like laughing,
she smiles at the cop.
Yeah, she's like smiling at the cop, and that was so creepy.
That was cool.
Unintentionally creepy.
Was she the hotel manager in The Mouth of Madness?
No, that's one of the, not Lynn Shay, but I think it's one of the Shays, right? Isn't it? No, maybe not. Okay, but it's not her. No,
we do have a lot of Friday 13th
alumni.
Yeah, the guy,
sheriff,
ma'am. We didn't find any boy.
Yeah,
and the one black cop was the guy from Jason Goes to Hell who plays the bounty hunter.
Yeah, Mike is it Michael Williams, something Williams, but Stephen Williams. But you will probably know him from the X Files, where he played X for many a year. In the X Files,
crazy.
Yeah. Also, you have Kane Hodder heading up the stunt team.
Yeah,
future Jason.
Yep.
Yeah. Usually. And we already mentioned Harry Manfredini did the music to this and did, you know. Really? I think Sean Cunningham's like the only person who employed him.
But he's good.
This may be his best score.
Maybe, even though it still sounds like Friday 13th.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like Friday 13th Part 6 specifically, which came out like the same year.
Yeah.
It was like, da-doom, dum, da-doom, dum.
Yeah. Well, I've always liked his music. I don't know why. Like, I don't know. That's why I realized it's like, oh, this director sucks. Because this is supposed to be the chase scene through the hallway, and it's. And that's supposed to be the most exciting part of Friday 13th movies, and Steve Miner just didn't bring it.
Yeah.
So, like, as the guy's writing it, I mean, in this way, it's almost like The Shining, right? A dude is, like, writing and getting kind of obsessed with what he's writing. Yeah. And, you know, not that in The Shining, he's like, I'm a mobster, see? You know, but since this guy has his own, like... He's got his own horror experience in Vietnam, where he's with Moose from Night Court.
Yeah, Richard Mall. Yeah.
And, I mean, basically, he's supposed to be almost like a Gomer Pyle character, right? This guy's kind of crazy. He's your you know, Dolph Lundgren, can you hear me? Like, he went on the deep end in Vietnam.
He's the Rambo, Travis. It's 1985.
No, he's not the Rambo, damn it. Rambo is supposed to be a nice story about, like, you know, damn it, we treat these people horribly, and they sacrifice their psyche for...
Yeah.
Well, in his own mind, he's his own soldier of fortune. But he's careless at war, and he ends up getting shot, and he's like, he tells William Kay, he's like, kill me. And the dude's like, I can't. Like, that, I thought that could have been touching, like, if it wasn't Moose. But William Kent didn't necessarily do a bad job, you know, but that was like really tough. Like, he's about to slit his throat and he's just like, I can't. So he has that horror of like leaving a dude behind to get tortured from the Viet Cong. You know, it's like, that's fucking deep, you know? I mean, I thought the jungle settings looked shitty. And,
oh,
like,
Jesus. Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Well, there was, like, sunlight and moonlight. It's like, why is there sunlight on their backs and moonlight in the front of them? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah. Is that the closet door? I don't know.
Yeah. No, the set for for Vietnam is, I don't know how to explain
only
it.
Only 10 feet wide.
Yeah. And packed with foliage. I mean, it is like, and those scenes kind of play out the way that, like, I mean, it's like the high school play version of Vietnam.
Yes. You know? Yes.
It really feels like, what in kind of alternate universe have we, you know? And I'm like, maybe there weren't like all, but I'm like, Deer Hunter was before. I mean, like, you know, movies where you'd actually do something that looked like a jungle and didn't look like we got all the model grass. You know, that's what yeah. it looked like. The stuff that you use in, like, you know, little model builds and all that
it
stuff.
It definitely looked more like Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, it really did.
Budgetary, but I'm like, but in some ways it went along with the style of the movie, right? It didn't, because the rest of the movie, I mean, we're not describing this right. It sounds more like a serious psychological horror movie, but this movie is batshit fucking crazy.
Yes, yes, it's all over the place.
It's awesome,
it's all over the place.
I think that's the evil deadness of it, right? When you get to one location and you have to have, like, I mean, everywhere he turns, he doesn't know what's going to happen. Like when he first opens that closet door and that monster comes out, that's the scene I was talking about. Like we're all talking, whatever, the monster, and it'll still catch you by surprise because you're just like, what the fuck? It just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. But I mean,
I think we all think, oh, there's going to be a ghost in the closet. It wasn't a ghost. It was a fucking monster.
It was a monster.
It was a big alien monster.
Cool monster, dude. Cool monster.
This is a movie where if you go into the tool shed, the tools will start attacking you.
That's what's like, and where's the house video game?
But like, this is like, I mean, like, okay, you know, I mean, even if I, you know, were to say this to you, listener, it's like, you know, so the tools attack. I'm like, okay, I expect that in a movie. But no, this movie, the tools follow you into the house.
They
come back later. They go up the stairs. They knock on the door. He opens the door at one point, and there's like, you know, the shovel is there.
Fucking hedge clippers knock on the bathroom door.
That's awesome.
And he is able to use this, and this is a credit to the screenwriter or the filmmakers. They are able to use these tools that are flying around as the punchline to the scene where another monster is attacking. He opens the door and the hedge clippers come in and behead the monster. And he's like, yes. And it's like a big moment. Everybody in the room here watching this thing was like cracking up, which I assume is what was intended when they made this. But I mean, it's just like the weirdest tonal, like, what the hell are we watching?
Because then it also fucks you up with, I mean, the nosy neighbor who kind of comes in and out and knows that this dude, like something weird is happening with this guy. And he steals his telephone book and like calls his wife just to let him know, like, hey, your husband's here. And
he's talking about seeing ghosts.
Yeah, he might.
Immediately before that, that same nosy neighbor lets himself into the house with a bunch of beer and Chinese food.
Yeah, that's being a good 80s neighbor.
Just walks in, what's with all the cameras? Yeah. What?
Well, I mean,
I want that there? 80s neighbor. I've never had that guy that'd be like, hey, dude, get it fucked up.
Yeah, just Chinese walks food. In with beer and Chinese food and is like, why are you pointing all these cameras at your closet and wearing an army uniform? Oh, never mind. Let's have some beer and Chinese
food. Well, I did like how with the next scene, he's like, yeah, I'll tell you all about the next scene. He's just like, yeah. And then my wife, he's like, cool, that's sad, man. So what's with the camera?
Well, this is one of the greatest, like, cul-de-sacs or whatever neighborhoods to live in, because not only do your next door neighbors come over at like midnight bearing beer and Chinese food, but the sexy neighbor across the street like likes to just swim in your pool every once in a while.
That's how they get attention. As they like do. It
yeah. That scene did not go where I was thinking it was going to go. She's I know when men want to work and when they want to play. We'll play later. So then she shows up with her kid and
needs a babysitter.
His wife. Very weird.
We're skipping over his wife and that, because that's the scene where he's trying to bury the monster that was his wife. Like when the neighbor calls his wife, the wife shows up. And I think that's a really cool scene where that's where he gets his shotgun out and all this shit. And, you know, then like the wife is sitting at the front door and, you know, he's got to do that nervous explaining thing.
What are you doing with that gun?
That shell drops and she can like, you know, she bends down to pick it up and comes up a monster. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was fun stuff.
He blows her away. And then it's the moment where like, of course, when the body hits the floor, it's the wife again and not the hideous monster. And you're like, oh shit. Like this movie suddenly got real. Yeah. Like, what do you do? Like, I mean, I can't imagine this movie if, you know, with that scene being he actually killed her, because it's like it's way too serious. Yeah. Well, I suppose we're talking about a movie where like child abduction is a thing. But, you know, I mean, the idea like if he actually killed his wife at that point, like, I mean, the character, the tone of it would have just been like shattered. But for a while you're left thinking like Did they really fucking do it? Like, he killed his wife.
He just shot his wife in the stomach.
He was hallucinating, thinking that she's a monster, and he fucking shot her in the goddamn stomach.
Yeah.
Then it's like the Keystone cops show up, and he has to hide the body, and it gets all very...
It's like, why you would hide the... That's why I'm thinking... Because I think he thinks it's also a trick. That's why he hides the body. You know, because he's like, he can't be dead. You can't be dead, you know? So he's like, well, I'll just get rid of the body because she might be alive still. This could just be another trick. But, you know, that's a monster. Not even his wife. That's genius. That's great.
Yeah.
That's how you play a... That's why I'm like, this is Evil Dead. It's Evil Dead. Even the hand. The dog digs up the well, he loose dismembers hand. The, well, yeah. Dismembers the monster. Yeah. That's where he talks to the hot lady in the backyard.
Yeah.
While he's digging the holes.
I don't understand. Because
where's the nosy neighbor there?
We established that these monsters are like... a reflection of his thoughts. Yeah, is that what
he's
you're
a
saying?
Horror writer, so...
So why was the wife monster... Why did she look like that? He clearly, like, has nice thoughts about his wife, but
But the house is just doing that to him. He's not choosing the forms that the house... I mean, the house is just using what this guy does. What is going to, like... I mean, if
she
the guy writes
like
horror...
the mom from Honey Boo Boo. Like, she was, like, jacked.
Yeah, she's very, kind of, I mean, once again, kind of Evil Dead 2-ish. Mm-hmm. She's the big fat mom in the basement.
Yeah. It kind of has that sculpt, you know, lots of the sculpted wrinkles and all that. It's like a purple skinned, you know, big lipped over.
But this is that kind of cartoony version like you're talking about. Yeah. There's like kind of
it talks like a fucking chipmunk when she actually talks.
It does.
Which is another like, what
remember
in
how
the hell?
We just watched Legend where like basically the devil was like, woo-ha! You know? And like something in the 80s was like, it must be high pitched. It's like, ooh, it's shrill and scary. But we're just
the
like,
devil didn't talk like that. The devil had a Tim Curry voice.
No, well, that was Darkness, father, the son. Yeah. The father was like, woo!
Make her one of us.
Make her one of us! It's like, is he a dark fairy? Is he a...
Yeah.
So, but it's a little bit of fun.
Well, I mean, this... I mean, if we can't explain what's going on. Well, I mean, like, there's like a rogues gallery of monsters that show up in this
the
house.
The fish.
Which is kind
which
of.
Which is the. Yeah,
there's
the,
a fucking mounted
it's the deer.
Swordfish.
It's the deer in Evil Dead.
Oh. Yeah, you're right, actually.
Don't tell me. This is Evil Dead, but made like a few years later.
I still think that's where they got the inspiration for that big mouth Billy Bass thing.
For sure.
This is it.
Take me to the river.
It's a weird scene because, like, you know, he's like, he's combating this, like, moving swordfish on his mantelpiece. And you're like, okay, so the man's like, he's either going insane or this is actually happening. So he goes out to the shed, gets a shotgun, and blows a hole in it. But when the thing dies, it makes this, like, really sad and pathetic noise where you're like, oh, poor fish. Like, what was it doing to you? It was mounted. It's not like going to move.
Dude, this house works on your emotions. I like it.
There's also, at some point, he discovers a portal to the void.
It was,
I guess,
in the closet, right? When the neighbor comes over and he's
the
like, there's a raccoon.
Yeah.
And like, just when I open this up, shoot it with this harpoon gun.
Didn't he say a raccoon the size of a Saint Bernard?
Yeah.
I love George Wendt in those scenes because, he's like, great. I mean, like, there's a different way, I guess, you could play this character where, you know, the nosy neighbor is somehow more sinister or obnoxious, but he's not really. I mean, like, as a character, he's even at the beginning when, you know, he's like, oh, you're Roger Cobb, you know, the famous writer and all that. And he's like, you know, I just need my solitude and all that. And he's basically like, okay, I'll leave you alone. I mean, he becomes kind of annoying to Roger Cobb, but not in a way that's, you know, he's not looking for his own personal gain. I guess maybe that's the thing that separates him from the way I imagine.
Well, he's just nice 80s neighbor. Kind of the overset nice guy, you know?
Well, even like when he steals, you know, where like he steals the address book so he can call Roger Cobb's wife. And it's like, okay, so she's a famous actress who's apparently like, I don't know if Roger Cobb is like watching all of her movies throughout the movie or like
it's the house.
They're the only movies that are on TV. Because
he turns the window off with the remote. So when he sees his son in the, like, we didn't even talk about that. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
He sees his son in the window, like, help me, daddy. And he just, like, turns it off with the remote control. And the movie doesn't even, like,
address it at all.
That's why I was like, I don't think he is watching his wife on TV.
Like, did he just turn his window off?
The ghost keeps reminding him of his wife to, like, drive him deep. Because this movie wants, the house wants to kill him. So it's just reminding him of all the shit that fucks him up.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, true. But I think that he also, like, when the guy gets when he calls the famous actress, he doesn't, like, he is genuinely a decent guy,
he's
right?
He's not starstruck. He's just like, I'm concerned about your husband. Like,
yeah. I mean, he doesn't work his own angle.
And the pure comedy would, like, have it with be like, I love this movie, or I love, you know, like, to end the conversation.
If they would write it that way today, that's
how you do it.
But it's
kind of nice that, like, yeah, like you said, they didn't have a little, like, just a stupid joke. The guy is generally concerned. Like, this guy's cracking up, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
And I do like the idea that eventually they get to, you know, I mean, because that's the dream team up, right? You get William Catt and, I'm going to say Norm MacDonald, but that's not his name. George Wendt together, like, ghost chasing for at least one scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, the harpoon gun.
We're going to use this harpoon gun and discover this portal.
He's wearing the goggles and just shaking, holding that. That's burned in my retinas.
That's a pretty good moment. This is where, like, they should go on in the sequels, right? Those two guys.
I love it.
You know, because that's the other thing we should say about, like, the character designs. William Catt is, like, also playing into his psychology, like, once he starts writing his Vietnam memoir, he wears his fatigues in, like, every scene.
Well, it was the one
he sleeps in his kid's bed too, which is also weird. But
ever since he was going to take pictures, that's when he started wearing the fatigues, right? Because he had his little, like, test run of running out of the house, like, I'm gonna open this and run out of the house. And that's where he wrote it, but he never took it off ever since. Like, he just kept it on.
He's because he's at war.
He's at war.
Yeah.
He's back in the mindset. I mean, there is like a
there's
is
a psychological angle to this.
It's
movie.
His battle armor.
That's why I like this movie. It's like a ghost movie should be more than just hello or like a painting like looking at you. Like, there should be more to ghost, and this movie does that, especially with the Nightmare on Elm Street angle where. Yeah, reality could break down at any moment. And to me, it's even a little stronger there because like Nightmare on Elm Street, you always need the kid in classroom kind of like dozing off. And then like as soon as they do the one head bob, you're like, oh, they're in the dream world and like anything to do beyond this point. But this movie, you don't need the head bob. He could just hear something and boom, you're going to see something weird or whatever, you know?
I feel like the head bob was every time he tried to write his novel about Vietnam.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that happened right before the fish. That happened right before the whole incident with the shotgun. Mm-hmm. And see, that's what reinforced the whole, it's just him having Vietnam flashbacks and it's triggering like a break from reality.
But we know his aunt killed her, so we do know at least it can't just be his psychological breakdown. The ghost is just like nudging the psychological breakdown, so it'll kill himself.
But from the psychological angle, all we know is that the aunt hung herself. He saw a vision of his aunt, which could have been a hallucination. Well, said, "I killed myself."
But she painted clues.
Of the house. Okay.
Is he imagining the painted clues?
Yeah, there you
maybe.
Go. It is objective reality. Yeah. The fucking house is haunted. We've solved it. Boom.
Just because she's painting. And I like how there doesn't, like, once again, dude, I love how there doesn't need to be an origin for the house.
But wait.
That's great.
What if the aunt's paintings were what helped drive his delusions?
That's what I was thinking.
Because she was raised, she told him all that stuff. He was raised in the house.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because exactly.
He's having
he saw the painting of all the garden implements flying
we're
around.
We're doing the house remake.
Yeah.
The house remake coming from the Saturday Night Freak Show. But we got all the answers, and we're going to make this a good movie. Well,
I
it's
bet
a good
you
movie,
that
a great movie.
These things are probably, they were on Fred Decker's mind when he wrote it. I bet you. Like, the guy thought this way.
It is
that's
a complex
it's like,
thing.
Wow, the movie that they made is like, it's a
but we got it. We got
could,
it all.
It could be deep.
It is, damn it. That's why I brought it to the Freak Show. It is that deep. You just have to think about it.
It's like they just scraped the top off the movie, and that's what we see. But there's like deeper levels.
Dude, this
there's
is Jacob's Ladder meets Evil Dead.
It's Inception.
Going back to the Evil Dead thing with like the monsters, there was when he discovers the portal in the medicine cabinet, he breaks a glass of
where he sees his son. He knows his son is in the medicine cabinet.
But it opens to a void that he repels down into. And before he does that, I guess there's all these like monster hands and tentacles that come out of it where you're like, somebody sculpted this just for one scene. I always love it when you put all that effort into it.
There's like an alien tail, it looks. Looks like the alien tail, right?
Yeah,
it
but it's like a tentacle deal that wraps around his son.
The monster hands and tentacles coming out of the medicine cabinet, as well as seeing his son in the medicine cabinet, when in the previous scenes when he'd opened the medicine cabinet, he was going for the Valium.
Yep. Yep.
Just saying.
Yep.
For sure. You're actually making me think that this movie was badly directed.
And he spilled.
Yes!
Oh, it was. It definitely was. Because he drops the Valium.
Yeah, it's like brilliantly written and badly directed.
It's like his salvation and his damnation at the same time as the drug that's helping him keep his PTSD away.
Yeah.
Yes. And this whole movie, I was waiting for these things to come together. I'm like, this is in his head. Yeah. It's going to come back.
But it's in there, damn it.
Yes. This is what,
I mean, the directing sucks, but it's there. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
We walked away from it with all this information. It's just there for you to work out.
Well,
the movie doesn't tell you.
I mean, I would counter that. I don't think the directing sucks because the movie that the director made is an entertaining movie. But like the director, I think Steve Miner had the idea to design the monsters the way they did and to shoot it the way they did and shoot in the location, cast it with Richard Mall and George Went, right? I mean, some of that humor had to have been in the script, obviously. Right. But like if you put Richard Mall as your, as this guy, like, you can't take it seriously. I mean, it's playing to his pre-built-in audience. It just seems like it's like there's this kind of schizophrenic thing happening between, like, Fred Decker's writing this, like, I'm writing this fucking horror script. It's got all this stuff in it. And, like, it's deep and it's connected and it's tight.
Well, this is also produced by Roger Corman.
Yeah.
Is that in the opening titles? I didn't see him either.
But it was on the Voodoo Info.
Oh, that's right. It was on Voodoo Info. It was
it's New World Pictures.
New World Pictures. So he distributed it.
Oh, that was his studio. So he had some
say.
Some money.
So I'm sure they're just like, yes, this will be this deep psychological. What? It made how? Like, Poltergeist and Evil Dead had made how much money? We're putting monsters in it. Yeah.
Like the flying skeleton monsters. And that's an Evil Dead monster.
That's Evil Dead monster.
Yeah.
That spins the shotgun.
Oh my God. I lost my shit. I lost my shit.
Once again, it's using William Katz. Cats, damn it. I want to say cats, plural.
It's like kit with two T's, only it's cat.
Cat.
Oh, it's not car.
It doesn't want to stop
R's.
There. Cat. I want to say cats.
Yeah.
Cats. But yeah.
Fucking pterodactyl skeleton.
Oh, great. Great stuff.
But it's like, it's weird, right? You're like, what
that
the
can
hell?
Really work a shotgun.
As you're dropping yourself into the void, which I'm like, that rope getup that he had.
That was awesome.
I'm like, does that,
yeah,
they
that
teach
works.
You that in basic training
just
or something?
I'm sure they did in those days.
That's what I was reading it as. I'm like, he knows how to do this because he was in the military.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, because you could see that when he was tying the knots. He was doing like sailor's knots. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wasn't he an infantryman or marine?
Yeah, but you still use knots. You can rappel. In the army.
If you call the FBI for a missing kid, I mean, you can learn how to recall in the army. Yeah. But he descends into the void and meets his pterodactyl thing that shoots him with his own shotgun. I mean, it's played for laughs. A lot of this movie is played for laughs. It's very, I think it's very funny, though. Like, I am, like, have a problem with, a lot of movies trying to be funny. But this one legitimately like worked a lot of times and the scares I think happened at just off time enough that they actually kind of do catch you by surprise.
He's that Ash character, right? He's this frantic dude running around a house dealing with weird shit, whatever. But I think just that story is a fun story, having a frantic dude dealing with different dimensions in his house. Mm-hmm. Man, that's a great
he plays it off very well. I mean, just in that scene where he's explaining it to George Went about the, like, we know what he's talking about and what he's seen, but he's coming off as, like, not crazy. Like, that's how George Went's supposed to perceive it. But to us, it's like, you see him as frantic and like, I have to explain it to this guy so he'll stay here.
Yeah.
And so, that's the point of view that you have. It's not like, this guy's crazy. It's like, I see what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a pretty good performance, I think.
I think so.
In spite of the V-neck sweater.
Yeah, well, the 80s. I don't think any, like, sleeve touched his wrist, right? All his sleeves are pushed up to his elbows. Oh, it's the damn 80s.
That was amazing.
Seriously, you could see, like, his sternum, basically. Yeah. Like,
Well, as Holly said, it was the Ken doll.
He looked like a Ken doll. Yeah.
It was sexy.
Yeah.
But I like how the bad guy of the house chooses the moose character, right? The guy that he left to die in Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, he chooses him. Well, I like that scene where he goes in the void and he falls. He ends up falling into the monster shoots his rope,
yeah.
And he falls in water, then crawls out of a river in Vietnam and finds his son in a tiger cage. Yeah, dude.
So the idea here is that the character, Big Ben, that he let die or whatever, yeah, that Big he didn't Ben. Kill in Vietnam, has somehow returned from beyond the grave, aided, I suppose, you know, off screen by the force in the house.
I still think it's just the house fucking with him. I don't think, like, the ghost of Big Ben. I don't think that. I think it's just the house fucking with him. It's trying to get, like, I know your personal fucking bullshit, and this is the form I'm taking.
Well, even okay, if it we says, can put this like, to the test, right?
Because William Katz says, like, oh, you know, you came here. I mean, he does allude to that in the movie that, like, you know, I told you I'd come here for you or whatever the fuck. But yeah, I
told you
house,
I'd get you. Basically,
but the house knows his memory. Because supposedly when Roger didn't kill him, or Roger, yeah, when Roger didn't kill him, he gets dragged off and he hears the guy says, I'll get you or whatever because you didn't kill me.
Basically the house is playing on the skeletons in your closet.
That's what I
think. And in
this
case, the actual skeleton in your
closet. I don't think the spirit of this guy came from Vietnam and like joined forces with the house to get like Roger Cobb.
Well, like I said, I think you could put the... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, because you can't think that the ghost came back and had the forethought to kill his aunt and then all of this other stuff.
And kidnap his son and hold him hostage.
Exactly. Yeah. They would have just, you know, fucked with him, basically.
Yeah.
Well, the resolution, I guess, I mean, I think bears this, what you're saying, out, right? Because the way that he defeats the specter of Big Ben, like after, you know, he thinks he throws him off of a cliff at one point. Don't ask. It's a house, and he throws it off the
cliff.
That
was a cool matte painting, though. I like that, like, that angle of the house. It's like from the kitchen, the house is torn in half, and there's, like, a cliff. That was very, like, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, right?
Right, yeah. That wonderful 80s fantasy horror. But after he throws him off, and you see the body like break apart on the rocks, the guy's still alive. And the way that Roger beats him is to basically, I think Big Ben tries to cut him, and the cut doesn't appear on Roger because he's like, you know what? I'm not scared of you anymore, Ben. And I'm like, okay, so we're saying.
He knows the house is trying to trick him.
Yeah.
What was it, I guess, that gave him, I guess I didn't see where he had the epiphany. I just saw 1 minute. I mean, because if I remember correctly, the scenes are cut together that, you know, he throws Big Ben off the mountain. Mm-hmm. Then he goes in looking for the kid. He hears the kid calling to him. He goes to the kid, and the kid is being held by Big Ben. Mm-hmm. He's like, what do you think? Oh, you're fucking around with me, Roger, or whatever the hell.
Well, but it
so
does
where
talk
does he have
him,
the epiphany where it's like, I know how to beat.
Well, what this. It is. At least how it plays out in my head is like this ghost is chasing him, and the whole time it's really a monologue. It's not like a threatening chase. He's really just being like, you left me, Roger. Now I'm, you know, blah, 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 blah. And at this point, this is when Roger is really at his most like sane because he does keep coming back at him. Like, I tried to do everything. Like, he kind of keeps coming back at him with his own like self, like almost like self psychology, right? Like, dude, I tried everything I could. He's working through it in a weird way, right?
Right.
So it's not like a oh my god, I got it. He's just talking back to him in defense, like he's so guilty. He's been like hurting himself thinking about it. But then when the outside force is actually being like, it's your fault. He's like, it's not my fault. I did what I had to do. He's
literally working through his demons.
He's literally like getting defensive, whatever. I also want to talk about real quickly when the monster comes back and Roger ends up, he's like, he tells his son to run and he ends up locking the door because the sergeant is on the outside. I was like, dude, the house is getting him to stay in the house. He's locking himself in the house, even though it's like, yeah, there's a monster coming through the door. But what's really going on in that scene is the house got him to stay in the house. Yeah. I'm like, that's fucking great, dude. That's a monster movie. That's a ghost.
It's
God
a monster house.
He's not, monster house. It's not just some little girl down a well scaring you.
Did we mention that it's not actually like what Big Ben looked like, it's now like Lieutenant Skeletor.
Yeah, he looks like Jason.
This is like, but this is a really, like, I saw this when I was a kid. Cool. I thought this was cool. I'm watching it tonight. I'm like, I mean, maybe this is just me. Cool. Maybe you guys didn't like it. I was like in awe of the sculpture work because I know you could see a little bit of, you know, the genie behind the mirror, the Oz behind the whatever. Yeah.
Curtain.
Yeah, behind the curtain.
Yeah.
But there was, when he would talk, there was some kind of remote control articulation in the eyebrows and the mouth.
Like head.
And I'm like, how are they doing that? Because the actor is under there actually saying the lines.
Well, this is after Chucky,
they moved
right?
the fucking line. No, Chucky was 2 years later.
But we know that they have full, like,
Realistically,
if we hadn't been able to see his teeth and mouth behind the mask, it was just distracting, is what it was. The rest of it looked legit.
You guys were pointing it.
Seeing his teeth behind the other teeth was very distracting.
Like, you guys were pointing it out, and I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it.
I know. I had a similar thing. You were saying it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to look
for
that.
Maybe it's that one scene. Because
I was like transfixed by the eye. I'm like looking at his other eye. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's. Is that Richard Mall's eye? Is that him in there? But yeah, I mean, it had a pretty decent, like, full body. I mean, I would say that that is equal to, in its execution and design, to the Friday the 13th Part 7 Jason makeup.
And personally, for me, I figured out tonight that this was the very first horror image I ever saw is that sergeant coming through that window. Because I always knew, I remember a skeleton shooting a machine gun coming through a window. But I always thought that it might have been American Werewolf in London because you have the demon scene, the demon Nazi scene shooting the family. But it wasn't until tonight I'm like, oh, fuck, no, it's got to be this, dude. It's a skeleton coming through the window with a machine gun.
Yeah.
So this was my beginning, guys, right here.
Started it all.
House.
I love it when that happens. I've had similar things where you're like, for years,
oh.
There's like that moment. You're like, I don't know, but there was this movie that freaked me out when I was a kid. And then you see it finally, and you're like, it's like a weird sensation of deja vu.
It's crazy.
And you're like, I think I've seen, this is the fucking, it's happening right now.
Yeah. My other one is Poltergeist 2, when Craig T. Nelson drinks the tequila and eats the worm, then goes inside and like throws up the monster. That's another, like, I just remembered it. And then, I just never really liked Poltergeist 2, so I never really watched that much of it. And then when I saw that scene, I was like, oh my God, this scene.
Well, I'm curious, Travis, what did you think of House 2, the second story?
Oh, it's horrible. It's got a catter puppy and a
I gotta see this.
It's got a western. The house is cool. It's weird.
It's like,
but it's more fantasy.
Move into a house. One of them has a connection to an old, like, they find an old western zombie played by Royal Dano from
I think he's
Ghoulies
in
2.
Was he from another dimension though? Like, I thought they found some glow. I fucking no idea. House 2 is so weird.
Like,
the
three of them end up going on some adventures through time and
space. It's not even like a horror movie. It's just a weird adventure movie in a weird way.
But it was written by the Ethan Wiley guy or whatever his name was, who wrote this one. He did the second one. And it was a legit sequel because I remember the first one, I remember when it was in theaters. And I remember it being a decent size. It felt like a decent size hit because of the awareness. And then there was a second one 2 years later, and now we're at a point where, like, nobody's fucking seen this movie because it hasn't been, it hasn't made it from DVD to,
well, second story, like, the latest, has a bigger cult following because of how much fucking weirder it is.
I don't believe you.
No, it's true. Because I've seen, like, online reviews for House 2, a second story, but not this.
Really?
Yeah. It's the catter puppy. People love the catter puppy. It's the cutest
Googling
fucking thing in the
right
world.
Now.
As soon as you see it, you'll be like, aw, cute. It's a catter.
It reminds me of Neverending Story.
Yeah, it's a catter puppy.
Aww.
You want that toy. Yeah. Actually, I was watching this review. Comic
a little dark crystal-y.
Yeah,
that looks in
yeah.
keeping with the tone of, I guess, like the same designers.
The 80s,
it looks
like.
Yeah.
So William Kent gets his son back. You know, that's like the big, that's why I'm like, it almost feels like the son, it could have been an addition to the movie in a weird way, because there's only a few scenes that really touch on it, right? But so he gets his son back. It's one of those moments where, like, well, the wife pulls up in a cab, the neighbor comes out, like, everybody that
what
you
is
need.
This, 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Like, everybody's just hanging out.
We need everybody for the end of the movie. Get everybody together.
Well, no, because there was a an explosion. That's why they came outside.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. That's right.
The grenade. The grenade.
That was good, too. I like that, where like it was like, I don't give you the power anymore. You know, that's how you beat a fucking ghost. You don't bury its bones. You just say, like, fucking ghosts are stupid. Just like, I'm a fucking grown-up.
I'm not afraid of you anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid.
He took the ghost's own weapon and used it against him.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to grab your grenade and pull the pin out with my teeth and shove it up under your weird fleshy carapace. And then away, you know.
So you got two 80s action deaths. You got falling from a cliff, and you got getting blown up with a grenade, like stuff in your belt. That's your Vietnam ending. But it was fun.
Yeah.
But the kid, like, I don't know. I always feel like this is the part in the movie where I'm a pot. This is the part in the movie where I'm like, so they're going to be like, you found our kid after 3 years. Was he in the pool? Where was the kid? In the basement? The closet?
He was in a hell dimension. I mean, come on, the capsule. I want to totally do,
in the Saturday Night Freak Show remake, I've always wanted to do, like, what if the kid never died? Because the only time you see the wife is when William Cat first talks to her on the phone when she calls from the award ceremony that she didn't win from, and he, like, quickly, like, I'm at a poker party. We're having a great time. I'm a loser. And then, the neighbor calls her.
Uh-huh.
And then it's a monster. So we really don't know. We don't know why they got. I mean, you through the movie, you know, they got divorced because the son obviously died. And you could tell there's really not a. They're not like happy about being divorced. They're both kind of longing for each other in a weird way. They do like. They show that really well. A few scenes. They show how, like, oh man, they couldn't handle the loss of their son, so they broke apart. But, like, in my remake, it's like, what if the son never died? What if the son was just in the mom's... The house made him think, like, the house took my son. The house took... Because it's like, that's the only weird thing about this movie, is, like, the fact that you gotta grab a kid from another dimension. Wow. That's what doesn't work with it's a psycho, like... Because, like, well, he didn't grab his son. Like, in my version, yeah, it would be all psychoanalysis or whatever. But no, this movie, he literally grabs his son out of a ghost dimension.
I'm thinking, man, this is like another parallel. This has the 1408, right? Because the John Cusack character lost his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing kept on playing on the idea of, like.
You should see when it was printed.
Yeah.
Stephen King's a hack.
He's like, I saw this movie House and it gave me some brilliant ideas.
But I'll do it Stephen King better.
I've always wanted to do a haunted hotel room. Just the room, not a house. John. There's a, yeah. It's called 1408. It could have been just not called hotel room. House. Hotel.
1408 was released in 1999.
Yeah, but the
rip off artist.
But the short story.
Or, yeah, the story. It wasn't.
Yeah, the short story.
No.
Oh, wait, hold on. 1408 short story. I clicked on the wrong thing. Let's see. It was.
Captain Google is on the case.
Captain Google.
I've been called worse things.
No, that's what we call the first person to look up something on their phone is a Captain Google. So, I mean, but I like the ending of this movie.
I love the freeze frame.
No, it's
19. I love that it ends with a freeze frame.
That's how you ended a movie in the 80s. Shit. You're like, you know what? Story's over. Time to go home, folks. Like, I hate a movie now where the movie ends and it's like, oh, there's still, like, going to be, like, 10 more minutes of, like, where these characters are going after this. That kind of sucks, too.
It's perfect. He comes walking out with the kid in his army fatigues and he's just, like, the hero shot.
Believe it
or not. Runs, that's how mommy, you ended mommy. Stuff mommy. In the and then 80s. It's the and then it's the freeze frame. He's just, right like, down smiling.
Freeze frame.
Yeah.
Like, hero.
So we did
done.
Captain Google it.
So did we see
I did Captain Google it. 1408 was released in 1999 as an audiobook, and in the it was released as an anthology of short stories in 2002, Everything's Eventual. So
Stephen King is a hack job. Stephen King watched House and he's like, oh, that's good, but I'm gonna make it better. Do my own goddamn way.
All right, so do we have any random observations about House before we go to the mailbag?
Is it time for Igor?
Everything else will be in wrap-up, so...
Oh, really?
All right, Igor, where are you at, sir? Yeah. Bring us the mail.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Why, thank you, Igor.
Appreciate it, sir.
All right, then. No witty joke.
I got nothing.
All right.
I got nothing.
Nothing about the color of his hair, the size of his shoes, the bolts on his neck, the goo that's dripping from the smell that he leaves, the trail of slime that... No?
I got nothing this week, okay. Man. I was going to say something about a clot, but I got nothing.
All right. Well, if you want to reach out to us.
Give us Igor jokes.
Yeah, give us some Igor jokes. There you go. That's what you can do. Or write to us about tonight's movie or any of the previous movies that we've done. This is episode, I think, 190.
We should really find out.
I know.
We're closing in on 200, yeah, folks. We need more fans. Special. And we need more letters.
That's right. We'll make you famous, just like us. Internet radio superstars.
We're hopefully working on more shows to put up on YouTube, hopefully.
Join the family. So you can get a hold of us on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. You can also find us on Twitter. We're @SatFreakShow. That's our handle. And you can write to us the old-fashioned way. It's Saturday Night Freak
Letter
Show
and pen?
At yahoo.com. What?
Oh, we should get a P.O. I know. We should get a P.O. box.
Get a P.O. box.
P.O. yeah, box.
To the Dank Dark Dungeon.
After 4 p.m.
So this week, Karate Warrior 2 writes in. Okay, this cool. is, I'm
I want to see that movie.
Just, okay, well, I'm not going to blow it, but I think that this is a longtime fan in disguise. He says that this movie, talking about House, this movie did nothing for me. It was very long and bland, but bleak is the word I should have used to describe it. Seriously, you're talking about House? We're wondering what? If
I can possibly, see,
are you talking about the Asian movie or
yeah,
the
1986? Yeah, I think you're talking about the Japanese. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see the bleakness of this movie. It's about a guy that lost his son.
This is a bleak
family.
Movie?
Well, I mean, not the tone of the movie,
this
the story
is a
of the
fun
movie. So maybe if, like, oh, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, maybe if something happened to Karate Warrior 2, then he's bringing it, like, nope, I don't like this story.
Yeah.
Which I would totally respect, Karate Warrior 2.
Yeah.
I love that name.
I just wonder if we're talking about the right movie. Maybe if you didn't.
Hasu? Yeah. Did you see Hasu?
Hasu.
Hasu!
All right, so you hear that sound? What's that sound? Everybody oh be quiet, because that means oh, no. It's time for
everybody be still.
The hour has come, sirs.
Thank you, Lurk. Whoa. Toby, that was our butler.
That's
it's
the,
best ow. If you don't make eye contact.
Okay.
The no, death gaze of a vulture circling above is the look of Lurk.
Whoa. Watch your copyright infringement.
Yeah, try calling him that to his face. See what happens.
You know what? I'm pretty sure Lurk would take care of it. He's dealt with copyright infringement before.
All right. So wrap ups going around the room. And guess who's in the hot seat tonight?
First up is Colin.
There you go. hello and welcome back. No, the House is a movie that I saw when I was very young, had the VHS, watched it a lot, haven't seen it in 20 odd years. Why haven't I kept watching this movie? Tonight, I was kind of curious how it was going to play. Like some movies hold up, some don't. You watch them, they're like, yeah, it looks like it was made yesterday. Some movies look like they shouldn't have been made at all. This one, I was actually surprised. I'm like, where is the love for House? This movie, I mean, I guess as you're pointing it out, Travis, I suppose it is derivative in some ways of some other 80s movies. But when I'm watching it, I don't feel it. You know, I don't feel the overt poltergeist influence, even though, yes, there's a kid who's abducted and ends up, they have to go through a closet to get, but it doesn't feel... I guess because it doesn't have that same Insidious feels more poltergeist to me than this does. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel Evil Dead-ish because of the setting is different or something, even though the monsters would be at home in an Evil Dead movie. I don't know. Somehow this works for me. Like I was saying before, I think the comedy is good-natured and off-center enough that it hits you in a way that it's funny. It's amusing.
This is not stupid dialogue. It's just... funny situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird situations.
It's not trying too hard. It's just like, I don't know, amusing. And a very, like, I mean, again, you have to kind of buy into the tone that the movie is setting up for you. I mean, it's really early on. I think probably in the bookstore is like when you're like, what in the fuck? These people are leering into the camera and like, oh, this is the what we're going for with this type of movie tone. Then there's the horror aspect, which is like, I don't think it's necessarily scary. I think it would be for a kid, you know, if you saw
probably
this when you were younger.
Yeah.
But
it's a great kid horror movie.
It's surprising. Mm. Well, aside, there's at least one F-bomb, so, you know.
Is there?
Yeah. But there's, you know, it's in Vietnam. In Vietnam, everybody swears.
That's right. Yeah.
Fucking and shit.
Yeah. So, but it's the horror. Okay. So maybe not scary, but surprising. There's even a moment tonight was like, oh, I totally forgot about this. You know, where the guy where Roger's running down the hallway at the end, and all of a sudden, dude reaches out. It was like, the music didn't telegraph that. The eye lines didn't telegraph that. I completely forgot about it. It was like, oh shit, the guy's like right there. You know, I mean, I was surprised at how often and how effective it was. So that's why, even though we're bagging on, or at least I've been bagging on kind of the direction of the movie as being at odds with what I think like the screenplay originally intended, I think the direction of the movie actually works for the type of movie that Steve Miner wanted to make. Like, I think he made a pretty good movie. I think this should be a legit cult classic of the 80s, probably in the same league as like Return of the Living Dead and Evil Dead or Reanimator. I mean, that's the kind of vibe that we're going for here, that fun 80s horror that they don't make anymore.
Yeah.
Because now we take things, I don't think you could do the thing where like the guy's sitting at his keyboard typing and he doesn't like what's on TV and he turns it off and then he looks over at the window and his dead kid is there smiling at him. So he picks up the remote control and turns the kid off.
Yeah.
He turns the window, you know, I mean, it's just like, that's one of those things where you've leapt outside of conventional logic here. We're like, what in the hell? What kind of rules are you playing by? And I think that's the kind of thing that makes this movie, like fresh, I guess, you know, when you're watching it now, you're like, I have not seen anything like that. I had an experience similar to this in years, you know, and I think it deserves to be seen. And hopefully someone, Shout Factory, if you're out there.
Right.
Or somebody, because what, Anchor Bay
did put a DVD House out. One and two, wasn't it? A House double feature?
I think so. They put them out individually and then together at one point. And then the rights must have lapsed. We watched it tonight. It's on Vudu. For rent, but the only standard definition. So as far as I know, then there's no HD master.
Yeah, where's the Blu-ray?
So where is that? Well, I don't know. Maybe there's a problem with some of the New Line or New World stuff, because Warlock also is not available on video. But at least there's an HD master of that, because it came out in Germany. So who knows? Maybe there's something house in Germany. Damn, we'll have to track it down. But awesome. Hopefully they'll put it out. Yeah, I really enjoyed House. A lot more than I expected to on this rewatch. I mean, like, seriously, I'm like, this should be a cult classic from, the 80s. More people should know about it, but that's just me. I would recommend it. I'll hand it off to Toby.
Oh, well, I still, after having watched this movie for the first time, I'm not sure if it was like a psychological horror or Vietnam flashback, or whether it was some kind of science fiction thing where they're dipping in alternate dimensions. But I would definitely say that I've seen a lot of 80s and 90s movies, and this one was very entertaining, definitely unique. I would recommend watching it at least once, maybe twice, depending on how you feel.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. This movie was fucking all over the place. It was all over the place. It was driving me crazy, but I kind of loved it. I thought the monsters were surprising. That was so surprising. Like, quite literally, like, it wasn't what I was expecting, and they popped up when I was not expecting it. And I really appreciated that. 'Cause a movie like this, typically, we just make fun of it the whole time. This one, I can't say that the writing was bad. It was actually pretty good writing.
Yeah, it's
not like bad. It really was. The acting wasn't bad. It was actually pretty decent. Normally, when we watch movies like this, I'm like, oh, the writing was terrible or the acting was terrible. Actually, this was pretty solid. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. This was a pretty entertaining movie. I agree that the direction felt all over the place, but maybe it wasn't. It was kind of up in the air on that one, and it definitely could have been directed in a completely different way. It could have gone a completely different route, but I think this route was really perfect. It was really funny. Like, it didn't feel forced. It felt like this was a really fun movie. Mm-hmm. It really did. I wasn't expecting that, and I kind of loved it, and I would definitely recommend it. It was a good time. There you go.
Well, as I said earlier, this movie is special to my heart because obviously it was like the first horror images I like recall seeing, you know, where, you know, in my subconscious I knew like these images, and then, you know, years later, found it. But even after that, I remember the first time I saw the cover of this movie. Oh, yeah. The Ding Dong You're Dead mm-hmm. with the severed hand pushing the doorbell.
It's a great...
That alone just captures my fucking imagination.
I used to draw the logo, like the lettering of the... Very strange. I don't know why.
I've got...
The diamonds like in the... Yeah, I don't know.
Even upstairs past the laboratory and all that, I have a drawing of a zombie hand coming out. It's like... That's like,
oh, yeah? That's your house?
I'm sure, like, subconsciously, that's how I could draw that hand coming out. It's because, like, well, I know a fucking evil hand coming out of some, you know, or whatever. But like, that alone, I mean, I would say I used to love this movie. But, I mean, I watched it and watched it and watched it to the point where it's like, that's how I can say, like, oh, this is made up of three movies, this, you know, I can see the production behind the movie. So at this point in my life, I mean, that's why I did want to watch it, because I'm like, holy shit, I haven't seen House in like 20 years. You know, I bet like House would be a good conversation, because I've always thought this about, like, you know, all the psychological angles of the movie. I was like, that's why it is an interesting ghost story to me, because it tries to do both. It tries to give you psychological and a fun 80s like monster like hoot. And does it like 100% succeed? It doesn't on both, because, you know, you can't be both, right? You can't be a 80s monster who and a psychological ghost movie. So that's why this movie it exists in this weird, like, netherworld, this weird limbo of, like, well, you know, it's not the most original thing you've ever seen. It's not the most scariest thing you've ever seen. It's not the funniest thing you've ever seen. But it is this, it's there. I agree with you with, like, it should be up there with, like, Return of the Living Dead of the 80s, because it... Well, I just like that horror. This is why, like, nowadays, whenever, like, we talk about our own, like, horror ideas, I always add comedy to my horror ideas, because, like, that's what I found so interesting about horror back when I was a kid, that I can laugh and be, like, totally scared or interested in the monsters. It's like, that's the best of both worlds. It takes you to a secure place and, like, takes you to the edge of whatever.
I think you have to take the edge off a little bit.
Yeah. In a weird way, and you,
like,
should.
Like, fucking Babadook scared the shit out of me.
It's a depressing movie. But that should
I needed
depressing.
To laugh.
Yeah, in the 2000s, it's like horror just became like brutality and like super serious. Scary. Like,
oh, yeah. Like, this is a sexual disease. Like, oh, all right, fine. We used to have like monsters come out of closets. Now this is like just a sexual disease. Like, don't have sex.
I just want flying tools. That's it. Yeah. Flying garden.
I want skulls with bat wings. I want, like, every tattoo I've ever seen in my life flying at me.
I want a skeleton pterodactyl to flip a shotgun like John Wayne. Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah. But you know me.
The closest thing to this is like Slither. I keep saying, like, right? Of the 2000s.
Slither is the closest thing. Yeah. But, you know, I've always been a huge monster fan. So anything with monsters, I just have a soft spot in my heart. But I totally recommend this if you've never seen it. I can understand it if you don't like it. Because for an 80s romp, there is some slow-moving parts to it. Like, I mean, for only a 93-minute movie, you could probably cut 10 minutes off it. Like, to be honest, I mean, it could be 88 minutes and not suffer at all.
Some of the Vietnam parts, you're like, where the fuck are they going with this?
You almost don't need it in a way. Yeah. I mean, I guess you need it for him to go to the Ghostland version of it. Like, I suppose, you know, just so you're not like, okay, we're in Vietnam now. Like, you wouldn't just be like out of nowhere. You at least know that's what he's thinking about.
I wonder if...
Because he doesn't even write anything, ever. He just has his title and sweats.
Well, no, we just don't get to see what
does he...
He's writing about the flashbacks.
But I remember every time we see the screen, it just says the title, and that's it. But
well,
I don't know.
Right after that.
I don't know.
I wonder if at the time that was assumed that, like, since we were doing the flashbacks, like, this is going to somehow tie into the, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it'd still be like...
It would just be weird if they didn't have the flashbacks, and then you ended up there later to find
his kid in a
tiger cage.
Or two flashbacks instead of three or whatever, yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, I completely recommend this movie, because it's a fun movie, it's just a fun romp, and it's hard to find a good bad movie. Like, a really good bad movie. I mean, something that's like, it's so fucking stupid, you'll laugh, hopefully, if you're drunk enough or like, whatever. This is like, you can actually have some, something to think about, something to laugh about, and just something to watch. With the monsters!
It's legit enjoyable.
Yeah, it is. It's a good movie. House! We forgot to mention that
I was just gonna say
there was a house, the second story.
Yep.
House three is called the horror show because for
not
some
funny
reason,
at all.
Yeah, for some, I've never
it's
even
like
seen
Shocker,
it.
Right? The guy gets electrocuted and then comes back and terrorizes these people in a house.
And
it's
I don't
called
know
the
if it was
show.
Was it House three internationally, but horror show in America, or
it was, the other
was
way.
It supposed to be House three? And they're like, since it doesn't have the same tone, since it doesn't
yeah,
have the
it was
same,
filmed as House
we'll
three,
we'll call it horror show.
And releases and it has Lance Hendrickson as like the dad in the house. I
but there is a House four,
yes,
and it has the dead hand holding a four in yep. a window.
And William,
once again, dude, the, a great because isn't
William
is
Katz
it,
in it.
House 2 has the dead hand holding a key.
Yep.
Oh, it's going I love those fucking covers, man.
Yeah. So House 4 is legit House 4, except the tone of it, it's like all serious and glum. It's not funny. William Katz back. It was from like the
it
90s.
Is William Katz back?
I think he's playing Roger Cobb.
Did you
maybe?
Say Katz?
Did I?
Sorry. It's, it's
William Katz apostrophe S. William Katz back. And yeah, there you go. See? But I think like it was like, if my memory of it is that it's really down, dark, downbeat and dour.
Weird.
And he's like depressed or whatever.
He
and
lost
I'm
his
like,
son again? Or is he a different character?
That's why I wonder if he's a different character with the same name or
I think,
something.
I think they're both on YouTube. Yeah. I think Horror Show and House 4
I remember
on YouTube.
Hating them both, if that helps.
I've never,
like, I disliked House 2, but I hated like, as in they were pieces of shit, the horror show and House 4.
You spit upon them? You took them out of the video store you worked in? No one will watch these.
Yeah, they were disappointed. Disappointments after birth. So, next week.
Next week.
Sean is going to return from wherever he's off finding
fucking
himself.
Fucking guy, part-timer is what he is. A part-timer. Yeah. That's right, Sean. You enjoy your summer, motherfucker.
Yeah.
It might last.
So he's coming back and he's gonna get us to watch Stuart Gordon's Castle Freak, which wait, that based on a
ish?
It's not a sequel.
No,
I thought it was the summer of sequels for Sean.
I know what's going on with this.
Summer's not
it's
over
actually
yet.
Actually, an H.P. Lovecraft adaptation, perhaps.
It might be. Is it?
I'm like trying to remember.
I think
was
Lurking Fear is a Lovecraft,
yeah.
Unnamable's
Lovecraft.
A Lovecraft? I don't think Castle Freak is a Lovecraft.
Okay, but it's Stuart Gordon. It's the people who made Reanimator and From Beyond making Castle Freak.
Castle Freak.
And that's next week.
Yeah.
He's a freak in a castle.
That's
what he
is. That's what I hear.
All right. On the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, friends, the basement is going dark.